Are we headed for a debt crisis? Is there a point of no return? And what does a debt crisis even look like? Hi, I'm Rob West. I can add another question. How would a debt crisis affect you? I'll talk to Jerry Boyer today to get the answers, and then it's on to your calls and questions at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, economist Jerry Boyer is president of Boyer Research and a frequent contributor to Faith and Finance, also a contributor to World Opinions. Jerry, great to have you with us on the program.
Great to be with you again.
Jerry, we're talking a debt crisis today. I know as you and I have talked recently, you've said that although in your lifetime you really haven't seen the possibility of a debt crisis here in the United States as plausible, that perhaps has changed given where we find ourselves today, and especially in light of new data out from the CBO. So give us a sense of where you're at with this right now.
Yeah, I haven't seen it as plausible within sort of the investable horizon. You know, I always acknowledge that there's the possibility of it eventually, but there have been a lot of predictions from our side, even going back to Larry Burkett, who's a terrific person, you know, who wrote, I don't know, was it 30 years ago about the coming economic collapse, or maybe it was longer. And a lot of people on talk radio and sometimes people who are into prophecy or et cetera, there's been all of these predictions about a debt crisis and hyperinflation and a collapse of the dollar. A lot of fear mongering. Remember the blood moons. That would be another example of that. And a lot of this stuff is wafted through the Christian community. And you know, people have asked me about it, and I've said, well, let's look at the numbers. And we had manageable levels of debt. People were predicting a debt crisis under the Reagan administration. Well, except we had 20% debt to GDP ratio. Now it's 100% debt to GDP ratio. And, you know, we had growing population then. Now we have shrinking population and fastly shrinking population that's of working age. So we're kind of in a different situation. We're coming up closer to it. I'm not saying that we're facing that right now, but I am saying it is no longer a concern to be dismissed or waved away. It'll never happen, and not thought about for people who are thinking about their financial future.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Jerry, obviously the CBO out recently with an update on the numbers. Give us an overview.
Well, the overview is that they added another $3.1 trillion to their expected debt, national debt, over the next 10 years. And they had, last time they did a report like this, they had added $1.5 trillion. So they've added an upgrade to their previous upgrade. So they have been systemically undercounting the amount of debt. And by the way, they're talking about roughly an average of $2 trillion deficit per year. So people get confused about national debt and deficits. So think of the national debt as you look at all of your debt, your credit card, your mortgage, whatever, that's your debt. Your monthly shortfall is your deficit. So if you are $100,000 in debt, let's say annual shortfall is $5,000, well, next year you'll be $105,000 in debt. And the year after that, you'll be $110,000 in debt. So the deficit is how much the debt is increasing. And now we're talking about deficits, not debt. The deficit is the annual shortfall of $2 trillion a year. So that's pretty serious. Also, I noticed that the Congressional Budget Office did not forecast a recession this year. Well, if we do get a recession this year, recessions always increase debt rapidly. Why? Because there's more social spending and there's less tax revenues. So those two things kind of add up together to an increase in deficits, which means an increase in national debt, which means we move even more quickly towards that cliff of a debt crisis.
And Jerry, just for context, you mentioned the $2 trillion deficit per year. How does that compare to our total GDP annually?
Well, total GDP, real GDP, is about $30 trillion. So, you know, that's about, let's say, between 6 and 7%, because it does vary. That is manageable. It's not great, but it's manageable. When the emerging market crisis occurred in the 90s, they tended to have deficits that were more like 10 to 20% of their GDP. So that's why a crisis, a debt crisis, is not my base case in the short run.
Very good. We're talking about a debt crisis, the possibility of it, and what that means for you. Jerry Boyer with us today. He's the president of Boyer Research and a frequent contributor here at Faith and Finance. Much more to come on this topic just around the corner, and then your calls at 800-525-7000. We'll be right back.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. One of the most famous Americanisms of our day, and it isn't just Americans saying it either. I've heard Canadians and Europeans say it too. The idea of self-made men and women intrigues us. You probably wanted to be one yourself. We all do, deep down, inside. But we can't pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps all the way to God. Paul reminds us, no one who relies on the law is justified before God because the righteous live by faith. No one other than Jesus can keep the law perfectly. But the good news is when we trust in Christ, his obedience is credited to us, not self-made. We're Jesus-made. Get Anchor Devotional in print monthly. Visit getanchor.com.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
I can just turn that radio station on and it just comforts me. It gives me peace. It gives me hope.
AFR is sharing the love of God, and we'd like to know how that has affected you.
I just want to thank God so much for Christian radio and especially AFR.
Call 877-876-8893 and give us a minute or two about AFR in your life. Call in your AFR story today.
Keep up the good work. You're an inspiration to me.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Are we headed for a debt crisis? Our guest Jerry Boyer, president of Boyer Research, says, well, it's possible as we look out into the future where we find ourselves today in terms of our current debt and the deficit moving forward on top of our population challenges, an aging workforce, and a host of other criteria at least puts it in the possible category. We're talking today about what that means for you. And Jerry, just before the break, you were talking about the CBO's latest numbers. In order to maintain this debt level, obviously interest rates are a key part of this, and our spending to service the debt is just shy of our largest expenditure, and that is defense, right? But it eventually will be the biggest area of our annual budget, right?
Yeah, in a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, interest becomes the biggest part, and then it tends to grow very quickly. So just imagine a family situation where you've got, you know, debt on the credit card, and then you use the credit card to pay off the credit card. You just say one credit card to pay off another. And eventually you might get to the situation where you're not just increasing the amount that you're borrowing, but you're borrowing interest. You're borrowing to pay the interest. And so the interest starts to kind of move up. There's like an inflection point. And that's a kind of a death spiral for a family when you get to that point. And that is the thing that is predicted to grow most quickly, the part of the deficit, which is interest on the deficit, interest on past deficits. So that's a concern. Another concern is that they are not forecasting interest rates going back to a normal level. Historically, interest rates are something like a 10-year treasury would be something like more than 5%. They're not forecasting, you know, a 5% or higher interest rate for the treasury over an extended period of time, which means suppressed interest rates. Well, that's inflationary. So if we allow the interest rate to rise to the market level, well, then that makes a debt crisis more likely, just in the same sense that a family that has an adjustable rate mortgage, when that mortgage goes up high enough, that creates a crisis. But if we don't allow it to go up to that level, if the Fed keeps pushing interest rates down through the creation of new money, well, then they can't fight inflation. So we have a situation where you have to do one bad thing or the other. There's no way to escape that dilemma.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Jerry, drawing from history, I mean, you and I were talking recently about Reagan's approach to really growing our way out of a situation like this. At the same time, Volcker was contracting the money supply. Why is that model difficult to repeat in this current environment?
Well, two reasons, because we don't have a Reagan as president, right? So, you know, Volcker was there before Reagan. Volcker and Carter didn't work very well. Volcker and Reagan worked, which is, you know, controlling the money supply, sound money, and economic growth. So if you've got too much money chasing too few goods, there's two things you need to do. You need to deal with the problem of the too much money, but you also need to deal with the problem of the too few goods. So you need monetary discipline, but you also need economic growth. Right now, all we have is the pain. All we have is the Fed fighting inflation by contracting money supply, and we don't have pro-growth policies on the side of the president. The other thing is, at that time, debt levels were so much less than they are now. I know there was a lot of talk about debt and deficits, but it was something like 20 to 30% of GDP during the Reagan years. I mean, higher, more like 30 towards the end, but still not 100%. Finally, we were a growing population at that point. The baby boom was still kind of new and coming up. Now that baby boom is retiring. And so people who are post-working age, that population group is growing at 250% of the rate of the growth of people who are working age. So for every person who is joining the workforce, say turning 18 or 19, 2.5 people are leaving. You don't have half people. So for every two people that are joining the workforce, five people are retiring. Yeah. Well, that's a serious problem because now they're consumers of government resources and they're not mostly taxpayers. They pay some and they're not growing the economy, which is why the CBO and pretty much any credible forecaster is forecasting very low rates of growth. Historically, America is a 3.5 to 4% growth country. Yeah, well, with demographics like this, we're more like a 1.5 to 2% growth country. So you can't grow your way out of debt if you don't grow.
Yeah. Now, Jerry, we'll get to what this looks like, drawing from history in other countries in a moment. But you're not calling for this now unless we were to have a challenge politically with increasing the debt ceiling this summer, right?
Yeah, these debt ceilings are always sort of a game of chicken. And if we had a situation where nobody swerved, and you know, then we could have a crash. I mean, if we defaulted, I think we would see some kind of debt crisis. And we might even have a little mini crisis just in the fact that we're playing a game of chicken. And you get to that, you know, you get to that brinkmanship where, you know, who's going to blink. And usually presidents win these battles when there's a debt level, a debt ceiling debate. Usually presidents win the debt ceiling debate because Congress doesn't want to be seen as, you know, triggering some kind of debt crisis.
Yeah,
I don't think that's likely to happen. So I think we get through this and we just kick the can down the road. But eventually you kick the can down the road, you get a can that's so broken up and crumpled that it starts leaking. The can can't be kicked down the road indefinitely. So it does seem like it's reasonable to surmise that we may well hit a serious debt crisis, but I would not say now. But the mishandling of now makes more likely the serious debt crisis later.
And if we got to that point, Jerry, what would that look like, drawing from other countries who have been in that situation?
When countries have debt crises, sort of depends. The European Union had a debt crisis, but they were sort of bailed out by the fact that the northern states didn't have a debt crisis and the southern states, southern countries did, and they have a single currency. So it meant there was a severe recession and significant inflation, but not terrible. The emerging market crisis of the 1990s is more indicative of what happens because they're not part of one currency unit and there was nobody really to bail them out. And so what you had is interest rate spikes, severe contraction of the economy, spiking unemployment, and spiking inflation. After World War II, Great Britain had a kind of a debt crisis and they defaulted and the pound collapsed. And that was inflationary and it led to severe decline. And Great Britain has never been the economic leader of the world again since then.
To get our way out of that, Jerry, obviously fiscal restraint would be key, but we'd need to innovate and we'd have to see immigration, right?
Yeah, I don't see any way that you deal with a situation where 70 million people have been aborted and we have a severely distorted population curve and we don't have workers. We have a worker shortage. Well, what do you do? Robots aren't ready to be our new working class. So that's immigration. The problem is immigration is highly politically contentious and for understandable reasons. A lot of conservatives feel that mass immigration might change the culture and the political dynamics. You know, that might be exaggerated or not. We can debate about it. But unless we really have some kind of cultural renewal where we actually assimilate immigrants, we had waves of immigration in the 1920s. You know, Irish immigrants, Italian immigrants, et cetera. But we were a confident country and we said, look, you're an American now. You have to give up your prior national identity. You have to join essentially a biblical Protestant culture. And they did. They largely assimilated culturally. But that's not what's happening now. We're a weakened culture. Our elites don't believe in our culture anymore. So we don't assimilate well, and therefore we won't tolerate mass immigration.
Jerry, this is something we'll continue to talk about, but thanks for stopping by, my friend. Really insightful.
My pleasure. God bless.
That was Jerry Boyer, faith and finance contributor and economist. Much more to come just around the corner. Stay with us.
AFA is no longer dependent on Facebook or YouTube to live stream our original programming. As of now, American Family Radio shows like Today's Issues, The Core, Airing the Addisons, and The Hamilton Corner are streaming live on the AFA streaming app. Independent live streaming is the next step as we come out from among them and separate ourselves unto the Lord. Search AFA Streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
What if buying groceries, gas, or dining out could help change lives? With Christian Community Credit Union's cards that give to missions, you can help spread the gospel, combat human trafficking, and protect vulnerable children with every purchase at no cost to you. Apply for your card today. More information is available at joinchristiancommunity.com. That's joinchristiancommunity.com. The credit union is an underwriter of this ministry. Membership eligibility required.
American Family Studios was started back in 2011 as a way to advance the Christian worldview into an increasingly media-rich culture.
Media is like such a powerful tool to communicate the gospel. I love writing stories, getting in my office, and just thinking, how can we portray this concept of who God's character is? And to get to use the gifts that God has given me is really a joy.
AmericanFamilyStudios.net.
Are you struggling to fit your faith into your practice as a Christian financial advisor? The Certified Kingdom Advisor designation teaches you a step-by-step process to confidently deliver advice that aligns with Christian values. Discover the skills you need to help your clients make a kingdom impact. Get started today by enrolling in the CKA educational program at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified. That's kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
My wife's aunt passed away, and we received a considerable inheritance from that. We talked to the people at AFA Foundation, and they were very caring. What excites us about the charitable gift annuity is we will always have income coming in. It will be steady. We won't outlive it.
See if a charitable gift annuity is right for you. Call the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance Program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Let's continue that conversation with Jerry Boyer today. We've been talking about the plausibility of a debt crisis. Could that be on the horizon in our lifetime? Well, Jerry gave us some insightful thoughts on that. Let's continue that conversation now with something that's more immediate. Jerry, obviously, all across the news today is the implications of the Silicon Valley Bank failure and the implications of not only that event and the government response, but really whether that's a sign of things to come. Give us your quick take on that, starting with, first of all, what happened?
Well, what happened is when you build a house on sand versus building a house on a foundation of stone and a storm comes, even though the houses look very similar when there's not a storm, they look very different after there's a storm. And Silicon Valley Bank had a very sandy foundation. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is that it's a regional bank, which means it's not as diversified. Now, there's lots of regional banks, and they're not all failing today. But it was a regional bank that was focused on Silicon Valley, hence the name. And Silicon Valley has gotten hit hard in two ways. One, the central bank basically subsidized large tech companies with easy money. And so when it's been as it's been pulling easy money out of the system, then that takes that subsidy away. And there have been huge layoffs in that area, in the tech sector, and in that region in particular. So when the Fed has easy money, it helps tech companies. So, you know, the opposite, when it tightens up, that hurts tech companies. And this was not a diversified bank. This is heavily enmeshed with the tech companies. Also, you know, we're all on lockdown for a long time, whether they were official lockdowns or, you know, partial lockdowns or just afraid lockdowns. And so what did we do with our lockdowns? Well, a lot of us basically bought stuff on e-commerce, you know, bought stuff on Amazon and DoorDash and the rest of it, and binge watched, you know, stuff on the streaming services. So now that that's over, then those tech companies have been hurt. So Silicon Valley Bank had a real problem in that it was a regional bank, and it had another problem in that the region is a region that's hard hit. On top of that, it was a particularly risky bank. They made some imprudent decisions. Like, for instance, they put a lot of money into long-term treasury bonds. Long-term treasury bonds are very vulnerable to Fed tightening. And therefore, they got hit really hard. They've been down a lot over the past couple of years, so they were incautious. In addition, it seems to be a very, very political bank. Its chief risk officer, you know, you read, I think her bio, you know, leads as queer person of color from a working class background. His job, I think I'm going to go with her. I'm not sure. Her job seemed to be to manage risk for the bank, but she took a couple of months off to plan not a gay pride day, but a gay pride month. And so there may have been a little bit of a loss of the function of risk management, which, you know what? That's a full-time job. Risk management at a bank is a full-time gig with a full-time salary. It's not something you kind of work in around your activism. So those are all the ways that it was sandy. The storm was the central bank created a bubble, and then it had to pop the bubble in order to fight inflation. And that's why the house was swept away.
Yeah, and obviously the panic resulted because then you lay this tech sector driven bank with a lot of clients that are in startup tech companies on top of the fact that they communicate by social media. And obviously in just a matter of hours, they saw billions of dollars of deposits flow out the door.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things there. One, it's a pretty tight community. I mean, it's a big economy, Silicon Valley, but you have a few major venture capital players, and they kind of move as a herd. So they're paying attention to one another, kind of behind the scenes. But as you say, on the other hand, they're social media companies. They are, you know, technology companies are largely communication companies. So news travels fast, and so the news did travel fast. A few key players kind of looked out in advance and said, hey, we're concerned about the soundness of this bank, and pulled some deposits. Yeah. They'll be blamed for this, but of course, a sound bank doesn't collapse when somebody takes out the deposits. Yeah. I mean, you go back to It's a Wonderful Life. Uncle Billy did lose the $8,000. I mean, that was the problem. The problem wasn't just there was a bank run. The problem was that Uncle Billy was incautious. Well, the Uncle Billies of Silicon Valley Bank were a little bit incautious and took some pretty high-risk bets. And so that news traveled quickly, and then you get a run, and there are other runs going on. So there are going to be other banks in vulnerable positions. First Republic stock is down a lot in pre-trading, because that's another coastal bank with a lot of wealthy clients. So a lot of investors and bank regulators and short sellers and CPAs are going to take a much closer look at regional banks, and they're going to find out. The old saying is, when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming naked, which is not as pious an analogy as the one I gave about the house built on sand, but it still basically has a similar point. They're all going to get their binoculars out and try to see who's been swimming naked. And so I don't think this stops with Silicon Valley Bank and, maybe First Republic. I think there's going to be some purging going on. Now, is that a collapse of the banking system? No, I don't think so. You know where I am on this. I don't see the crisis like at the precipice, but we are getting more and more vulnerable. We're more fragile the more we've been violating biblical principles, and we've been violating them a lot lately.
Yeah. Jerry, just about 45 seconds till our break. Obviously, a lot of folks using the word contagion. You take issue with that idea here, because it's not like one bank gets sick from this bank's mismanagement. But is this truly isolated, or is this just a sign of things to come, especially given that these banks are dependent upon treasuries and treasuries have lost a lot of value? Let's do this. Yeah. Let's take a break, and then we'll get your thoughts on that on the other side of it, because I don't want to squeeze you on your answer there. We're talking to Jerry Boyer today. Today we'll continue one more segment. Plus, we'd love to hear from you. What are your questions today related to this or other financial topics? The number to call, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. A bit more with Jerry Boyer just around the corner. Stay with us. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Here's Pastor Jeff Shreve with From His Heart Ministries.
Think how different your life would be if you really believed that you, little old you, were a person whom Jesus loves. You let that settle in your heart and it blows you away every time you think about it. Wow.
Discover how to have a life that really matters. Join Pastor Jeff Shreve on From His Heart, weeknights at 6 Central, here on American Family Radio.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. And here's the website, chministries.org.
CHministries.org.
45,000.
That's how many times FaithFi referred a listener to a certified Kingdom advisor last year. And for good reason. These are trusted financial, legal, and accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure biblically wise financial advice as part of their practice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to faithfi.com and clicking on the Find a CKA button on the homepage.
What does the American Family Association stand for? AFA believes that all men and women, whether in private or public, should be free to exercise their faith without hindrance from the government. These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at EventideInvestments.com. That's EventideInvestments.com.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. We're talking with Jerry Boyer. We've been talking debt crises, also Silicon Valley Bank, and what you need to know about that regional bank's collapse. Jerry, just before the break, you were explaining what got us to this point. And obviously, this is a regional bank particularly vulnerable because of the easy money, the dependence on the tech sector, which is obviously high growth, under pressure in light of rising interest rates and a contracting balance sheet and money supply from the Fed. So you're saying this is fairly isolated. But what do we need to know about perhaps what this could indicate for other banks, and you know, do we need to take anything away from that?
Yeah, isolated to certain kinds of vulnerable institutions, not isolated to just this one bank. Yeah. You know, when we talk on Friday, I think there'll be other banks that yeah. we'll be discussing. I don't mean to make light of it, but I mean, it's just a little bit like a Psalm 2 kind of point of view. This is the folly of man, and we're watching it play out. This idea of contagion, I think, is a little bit misleading, because in a contagion, let's say I'm sick, and then I sneeze on you, and you get sick. So I made you sick. But that's not what happens when we have this sort of thing, like these bank runs. Or, you know, we had this in 2000, 2001 with Enron and then WorldCom, and a whole bunch fell. In this case, it's not that these banks are making one another sick. It's that we're learning who was sick all along. Yeah. And one of the ways you do that is, okay, somebody gets sick. Okay, everyone's going to get tested for – everyone in the office is going to get tested for COVID now because Joe has COVID. Ah, now we find out that maybe a third of the people have it. So what's going to happen now is there will be more scrutiny. There will be more stress testing. Short sellers, people who invest in such a way that they make money when the stock goes down, are going to be looking for the next sick bank. So I think contagion kind of gives you the idea that there's like an out-of-controlness to it, like an epidemic, like who knows who's going to get the sickness, when in fact I think it's more designed and rational. It's more like you've got a whole bunch, you got a housing development, but some built on sand and some built on stone. And now there's a flood. I don't think there was just one house built on sand. But that doesn't mean that there are many, many, I think the vast majority of banks in America are sound banks. The larger ones tend to be more sound because they're more diversified. So given past experiences, we see some more runs. We see some shutdowns. They probably get absorbed by some bigger banks. I don't like that. I don't like the concentration of power in these gigantic banks. But generally, we come out of a crisis with more concentration of power, not less. So, I know there's some people who are panicking. First of all, panic never makes sense. Even if things are terribly, scary, panic still doesn't make sense because panic is the inability to reason. But I also don't think it's justified. I just don't think that we have some kind of systemic risk to the entire system like some people are talking about. Maybe later we face a real debt crisis. I think that's a real possibility. But I do think that currently government policy, there's no good government policy right now. There's only, you know, worse or bad or worse. I think the bad but, you know, stem the tide policy that the Fed is taking right now will get us through this. But I think some banks are going to fail. Now, what does that matter to you? Well, if you have more than $250,000 in one bank, you might be vulnerable. I don't. I don't think you do either. And I'm a big-time economist, and I don't have more than $250,000 in one bank. So I think most of the listeners are fully insured. But if you have more than $250,000 in a bank, you might want to think about spreading that out and getting under – I think that's the cutoff. You know this stuff actually better than I do. Is that the – yeah. So you want to be diversified that way. So don't panic. Understand that God is in control. Understand that God being in control shows up both when we do what he says and prosper, and it also shows up when we do what he says not to do and we suffer crisis as a result. In both cases, God gets the glory. I just like the first one better. That's a better way to go, to glorify him by obeying and living well and peaceably and stably rather than glorifying him by violating his principles and seeing things fall apart.
Yeah, that's helpful, Jerry. Let's take a phone call, Jerry. Anthony's been waiting patiently in Texas. Anthony, what's your question today? Go ahead.
Yes, my question is, what should be our individual approach towards money biblically and preparing for a not only current but future economic crisis?
Yeah, Jerry. So obviously Christian's been talking about this for a long time, as you said earlier in our interview. What would you say to the average Christian who is concerned about the possibility of an economic crisis, whether it's a debt crisis or something else down the road?
Well, I think it's the same answer. You know, whether we have a crisis or not, live wisely. And everyone who listens to your show knows what that means. Yeah. God owns it all, right? That's the foundation. It means budget, control your spending, don't depend on debt, pay down debt rather than increasing debt. You know, be frugal and be generous. Well, how does being generous benefit me? Well, being generous builds community. I mean, if you're talking about, I'm not saying be generous because it benefits you, but being generous does benefit you. When you are giving to, especially to local ministries and to your church, you're building community, and community is what you need in a time of crisis. If we don't have a crisis, no one, I think, is going to look back and say, gee, I wish that I didn't have this margin. I wish that I had more debt. I wish that I didn't have these savings. So you do the same thing whether a crisis is coming or not. You just, if there's, as risks are rising, it becomes even more imperative. Now, there's some reallocation decisions to make, and you and I have talked about this, maybe be at the upper end of your goal range. If you work with your financial advisor and you have some set aside to an inflation hedge like tips or gold, or for some people that's going to be cryptocurrency, that's a bumpier ride. You don't put it all in that stuff. You don't put all of your money into the hedge, right? You put your money into the investment, and then you hedge against what would happen, you know, if we had very high inflation, but maybe more at the upper end of that range rather than at the lower end of that range. And so far, that advice is looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, very good. Jerry, quickly, as we wrap up here, your thoughts on the government response to SVB?
When you make a lot of bad decisions, you get to the point where there's no really good decision. So I understand it's a little bit like the financial crisis in 2008. People said, what should we do? Should the government do a bailout? And no, it shouldn't do a bailout. What the government should do is get rid of the regulations that are actually causing the problem. And of course, the government created a bubble. At this point, we're so addicted to easy money, and then having been addicted to easy money, the easy money taking away is causing these withdrawal pains. It just might be that we're so fragile that we can't say, let the market work it out, and if these banks fail, they fail, and if people over $250,000 were imprudent in deposits, were imprudent and let them take their lumps. I think we're so emotionally fragile and spiritually fragile and financially fragile that we might have to do the not very good thing not bailout, not a bailout of the banks. Let the banks fail or whatever. The shareholders need to take the lumps, but maybe some kind of backstop that makes sure that all the depositors get out. I mean, anybody who's rich enough to have more than $250,000 in one account ought to have been smart enough and prudent about their money to spread it out. But if they didn't, we don't need a panic. So probably the Fed has a role of arranging some shotgun marriages between failing banks and bigger banks, and a bigger role than I think government should have. But I'm not sure that we can actually handle freedom right now.
Yeah, interesting. All right, Jerry, always appreciate you, my friend. Thanks for stopping by and for your great analysis. God bless you.
God bless you.
All right, Jerry Boyer. He's a columnist at World Opinions, actually a column out today on this very subject. We'll be right back with much more.
Virtues are instilled in your children with laughter, not lectures. On the next Focus on the Family, Courtney DeFeo will share how you can increase gratitude, generosity, and joy in your children. It's a practical program for parents on the next Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
When I read the book of Esther, it just fires up my encouragement. It reminds me that when things look so bleak that you're just about ready to write the obituary, God rises up from the ash heap of your misdirected hopes, and He reverses the irreversible.
Dr. David Jeremiah continues his series, Esther, for such a time as this, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
God's Word is packed with life-changing wisdom about your finances, and FaithFi is here to help you and many others to be wise stewards of God's resources. As a nonprofit organization, we rely on help from FaithFi patrons, supporters of this mission, to help us continue and expand our outreach. Please consider becoming a monthly FaithFi patron. Visit faithfi.com and click Give on the homepage.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
Thanks for joining us on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Let's head back to the phones. By the way, in just a moment, Bob Dahl with us today to weigh in on the market action in light of the Silicon Valley Bank failure. We'll hear what Bob has to say and also some economic data coming out here in the not-too-distant future. We'll get Bob's take on all of it. To New York. Hi, Pauline. You've been very patient. How can I help you?
Hi. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was working, I have a TSP. I was working with the person that's assigned to help federal employees with their TSP and going through all of that and diversifying the account. Well, he mentioned he could also help with the IRA if I had any personal IRAs. So I said, yes, I had $17,000 in an IRA at my bank that's not yielding any interest. It's like at a 0.036 or something like that.
Yeah.
So we discussed some other options. And we found something that might work for me, and we go through the application process, and then he said, this annuitant. And for whatever reason, I had a response to that, but I couldn't articulate, as a longtime listener, I couldn't articulate why I was having a response to it. So he said, okay, we'll hold, and let me send you information, and so you can review it. I don't want to do anything you're not comfortable with. And so I didn't know what to do next, so I called you after I got off the meeting with him.
Yeah, very good. Well, I'm delighted you did. So it's in an IRA now. It's not an IRA annuity currently, but he's suggesting you move it to an annuity. Is that correct?
Correct. It's with my bank right now.
Yeah. So I agree there's a better place for it. My opinion is that it's not an annuity because, simply put, they're expensive. You pay fees and commissions. You pay penalties for taking your money out. And the guaranteed return itself is expensive because in exchange for it, you're giving up market gains than you could, that you could get with a properly diversified portfolio over time. So what I would prefer to see you do is to move that out into an IRA at a brokerage firm, let's say like Fidelity, and then just invest it in high-quality mutual funds. You could just buy a total, you know, stock and bond market index that just captures the broad market moves and just kind of forget about it, let it grow over time. You could take a little bit more hands-on approach with our friends at soundmindinvesting.org. They could give you some specific mutual fund suggestions to take advantage of. You could use a robo-advisor, you know, like Betterment or the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios, where it would, you know, be a little more tailored in the indexes that they're using, but you'd still capture the broad moves of the market. But you'd get 100% of the gain. I mean, you're already in a tax-deferred environment, so you don't really need the tax advantage that an annuity may offer. And, you know, as long as you've got a long time horizon, I think there's better ways to go than to stick this into an insurance product, because, you know, you're going to have to give up something in order to get that downside protection. And what I think you're giving up is long-term appreciation of the portfolio. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. It does make sense. Max, one additional question.
Of course. Yeah.
We have, so I understand about the annuity, maybe not the way to go. We have two small children and we're just wanting some general information. Where do we start for them in terms of their financial? Where should we just don't even know where to start. They have a savings account that we put money in every month, but from there, we just don't know where to go.
Yeah, in terms of preparing financially for their financial future or educating and equipping them with principles?
Well, a little bit of both, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So in terms of educating them, you stay on the line when we're done. I'll get your information. I'd love to send you a gift. It's called The ABCs of Handling Money God's Way, and it's from Howard Dayton. I'll send that to you just as our way of saying thanks for being on the program, and I think that'll give you some good ideas. Beyond that, I love that you're just starting to save. I think that's really the key. And, you know, whether it's saving generally and maybe a high-yield savings account or with a longer time horizon with a separate investment account where you just, you know, socking away $50 or $100 a month into an investment portfolio that could be growing, or specifically for college in a 529 education savings plan. And you can go to savingforcollege.com to determine the best state's plan for you from a performance and a tax advantage standpoint, savingforcollege.com. That would be a great option. But I would just say, you know, keep in mind that there are ways to pay for college apart from you saving. And so make sure before you're putting, you know, really meaningful money away for their future, you're taking care of your own financial house in terms of, you know, not having consumer debt, having an emergency fund in place, and saving 10 to 15% for retirement out of your pay. As long as you and your husband are doing that, then great. You know, if you want to save for the kids, I do it in one of those two ways. I wouldn't put it in a custodial account where it's automatically going to become their asset at the age of majority. I'd just keep it at a separate account in the name of you and your husband. But secondly, if you want to save specifically for college, that's where a 529 can work very well for you, and savingforcollege.com could help you pick the right plan.
Thank you so much.
All right, stay on the line. We'll get your information, Pauline, and get that book right out to you. And thanks for being on the program today. 800-525-7000. It's Monday. That means Bob Dahl's with us today. Bob, a busy Monday, huh?
Yeah, craziness is crept in. You know, Rob, we've said all along, when interest rates go from 0 to 4 and a fraction in a 12-month period, there are going to be dislocations, and now we have a significant one that actually is not out of the ordinary. Every tightening cycle has what I call a bump in the night, some sort of financial shock, and this is what we're dealing with here with the Silicon Valley Bank and all the collateral damage that is occurring from it.
Yeah, Bob, do you feel like this is a sign of things to come, or is it really just one of those bumps? Because as we've talked about earlier with Jerry Boyer, you know, this they were particularly susceptible given not only how they managed their own risk of their own portfolios, but also just the sector they were concentrated in.
Yeah, certainly the locus of all that, Silicon Valley Bank, fits that bill. But others are not too far from it. You probably know over the weekend the Fed closed a Signature Bank, yeah. and with similar mismatch of assets and liabilities and a duration problem in fixed income. So we're probably going to have more of that collateral damage before this is all over. I think that the bark in the market is probably worse than the bite is actually going to be, but a lot of people are pushing the panic button and probably overdoing it, in all honesty, with a sell-off in some of these financials, Rob.
Yeah. Bob, does this cause the Fed to next week consider an interest rate hike differently than they would have, let's say, last Thursday?
These bank problems, the debate was, will it be a 25 or a 50 basis point increase? 25 was initially thought, and then we got some of those strong economic and inflation numbers. Oh, maybe we'll get 50. Now the debate is, will it be a 0 or 25? Yeah. The Fed may take all of this and say, we need to take a pause here. They may still try to separate fighting inflation, Fed funds rate up 25, from all these other facilities where they're guaranteeing and backstopping the depositors for the money they have in these banks. Jury is out, time will tell, and a lot of sorting out to do. I was going to say it at some point, I'll say it now. There's more we don't know than we do know, Rob, and that's often the case when you hit these walls that you don't know when they're going to go bump in the night.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, Bob, I know you have a busy week ahead. We appreciate you taking a few minutes for us today. Look forward to having you back next week.
Sounds great. Bye-bye.
All right. Bob Dahl, Chief Investment Officer at Crossmark Global Investments. You can learn more at crossmarkglobal.com. Back to the phones we go to New Mexico. Anthony, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, Rob, thanks. Appreciate you taking the call. I, of course, with all the news on this tech sector, I had acquired shares of a tech company from a previous tech company that I had invested in. And I'm a small investor, about $66,000 is my original cost. And, of course, the current tech company is under going to be a class action suit against it. For a small investor, is it better to what's the best action to take? Maybe no action at all, or to join into a class action?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I can't give legal advice, and so I would seek the counsel of an attorney. I would just say, generally, I'd only join a class action lawsuit if I've actually been harmed financially in some way that money would correct. I think a person has a right to do that. We need to, I think, have watch out for the get-rich-quick mentality and trying to get something for nothing. But if there was, you know, some harm that occurred and participating in this could correct that, then I would say, generally speaking, you know, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Does that mean, like, of course, you haven't been hurt financially, unless you trade your stock in for money, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unrealized, of course, until you sell it. Go ahead, finish that thought.
Well, just not do anything at this point, and then could I lose the whole thing if I don't do anything?
You certainly could. I think your next step is perhaps to get some legal counsel. Maybe you've got a securities attorney at your church or something like that that could give you some counsel here. But I think that's probably your next step, to have somebody review this for you. Thanks for checking in with us, Anthony. We appreciate that. Elijah, I see your question about FDIC insurance. Basically, you can get $250,000 per bank, per account category. So if you're at multiple banks, not different branches, but multiple banks, you can get $250,000 for each one, and then per category. So a single account would be a category. A joint account is another category, so you get another $250,000. So it's per bank, per category, and you could do a search on the internet to find out what those ownership categories are. Thanks for writing and calling to us today. Well, that's going to do it for us. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Thanks for being along with us today. Hope you come back and join us tomorrow. We'll do it all over again. We'll see you there. God bless you. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.